Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to come to order.
And maybe now you can hear me better. I want to welcome you to the Public Services Committee, Monday, July 2nd, 2018. We are all running a little bit late, but we want to welcome you here. The first item up for on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the April 30th, 2018 meeting.
Make a motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of April 30th, 2018. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Second item on the agenda is public comments. Do we have anybody in the audience who would like to comment on the Public Services Committee in particular? Hearing nothing, we'll move on to item number three, which is the update on the roll cart distribution. And Mr. Peel, I turn it over to you.
Good afternoon. As you well know, that several weeks ago, we actually made our first move with moving forward to fully automated garbage trucks. We actually issued our 8,000 carts the past couple of weeks. And we just want to give you an update. Andy will give you an update on what we've learned and what we will not do the next time, because we'll be doing this again in the near future. So I will turn it over to Andy, let him give you a little presentation of how it went for us.
Mr. Weiss, good to see you.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Shouldn't take long. It's a quick overview of kind of what we did and where we think we'll be going. As you know, in FY18, we were authorized to purchase two fully automated garbage trucks, which we hope to arrive late this summer or sometime early this fall. Each truck's supposed to have the capability to collect about 1,000 cans a day, and as you know, we run four routes a week. So we went out and purchased 8,000 cans in order to put 2,000 on each day, so each truck would be able to collect 1,000 a day. In order to get these cans out, we contracted with a company called Waste Recycling Services out of Texas, and they distributed all the carts and collected the old ones. We thought it would be important to get out there. We thought the communications effort would be huge in order to keep the public informed of what we were trying to do and how we were going to do it. So on May 7th, we put a flyer on every can that was going to be switched out. So we put out 8,000 flyers, or give or take, and in order to explain to the public the process and how it was going to affect their garbage collection in the future. We also kind of did a social media blitz and pushed out information via Facebook, Twitter, Nextdoor, et cetera, the town website, and we communicated with homeowners associations for the different neighborhoods that we'd be working in. And then in the end, as each cart was delivered, we put a bag of literature on it. It had two pieces of paper in it, and they're on display on the slides there. One was a schedule that shows, you know, where the holidays are and what the collection schedule, where it would vary. The neighborhoods for each day were on the back side of that pamphlet, and then the next sheet talked about recycling and where people can go take things, since it's a Charleston County effort, not a Mount Pleasant effort, and then also about trash collection and garbage collection and the cans themselves and how they'll be employed. On the week of starting May 14th, Waste Recycling Services started their efforts, and they had 3 weeks to get the job done for us with the intent of putting out 2,000 roll carts per day. They ended up delivering 7,982 carts, which was pretty close to 8,000, so it was what we were hoping for, and they removed 7,276. It cost the town $85,400 to do. And since then, we've collected approximately 393 carts. Those were numbers as of last week. And the hard part there is, you know, people would put out the cart and bring it back before it was collected, and you know, they got left out there. So we're kind of picking up the remnants as we can. And currently, we're using a company called EnviroVision Technologies out of North Carolina, who is now coming down and taking the old containers, breaking them down, and shipping them out to be recycled. This map shows the neighborhoods in green that were where the roll carts were replaced. As you can see, they're spread really across the town, and this will enable us to use the fully automated trucks on all four routes. Lessons learned from this was, which would be used, would which will be useful because, as you know, in FY19, we're getting two more trucks. So we'll have to do this again and probably issue another 8,000 containers to support that effort. Preparation was key, you know, before we started this. We put a lot of effort into working with the GIS folks in IT in order to build maps and spreadsheets and everything. So when the contractors came in, we could give them a roadmap basically saying, these are the roads you need to go. Here's the addresses put on the sheet if you collected a can and if you dropped a can, or if they had two containers, you know, you took two containers and left two containers. But we were actually commended by the contractor. They said it was probably about the most seamless process they'd seen. So that really paid huge dividends for us in trying to make this effort work. The other thing that really helped make this successful was the addition of our communications and marketing coordinator, which was a new position that we added last year. It was great having somebody that could be involved in the project, know the ins and outs of it, and then portray the information out to the public in a timely manner in order to keep them abreast. And this is continuing with the SNE Farm SRF project and all that. We're really trying to capitalize on keeping the people in the loop on what we have going on and how it's going to affect them. We also had daily coordination meetings with the contractors, and again, it made sure we knew where they were going. They knew where our trucks were going to collect, because we did try to collect the garbage and then leave an empty can for them to pick up and then replace it with the new can. So that daily coordination and deconfliction really helped the effort move relatively smooth. Two lessons learned that, you know, we've learned that it's easier for them to deliver containers if they're not assembled. We went and did assemble all of them beforehand because that was the impression we were given initially, that that's what we needed to do. So we assembled 8,000 containers, but in the end, it ends up being easier for the contractor to assemble them on scene. So we will try to change that in our plan for this next year. And then another thing we learned is second containers are hard to track. I mean, people have had second containers for years, and honestly, it's further back than most of our records go in a lot of cases. So, you know, we had to estimate how many second containers would be out there. By doing this can replacement, we'll have a pretty solid number in the future going forward, because we now know who's been given two new containers, you know, through this process. One challenge we had, we did start getting some calls for dirty containers, and it's a problem that I'm not sure we could have fixed. I mean, we assembled 8,000 containers over the course of several months. They were stored in a dirt lot at 6 Mile, and it rained. And so some of them got water in them, some dirt splattered up on the can. In order to deliver 8,000 containers, they have to stack them. So then you started getting dirt inside the cans. We really couldn't do a lot about that. That's just kind of, I think, the cost of doing business. But that was really the only complaint we had throughout the process during this. The other thing we learned is 8,000 containers is a lot, and we don't have the ability to do that in-house and keep doing what we do on a daily basis. We're not built for that. We're built to do everything that we do, and this is an extra task that it would be very hard for us to do without the contractor support. And other than that, we will make minor adjustments for phase two when we do the next 8,000 cans, but overall this was a pretty successful effort for us. That concludes my presentation if you have no questions.
Thank you, Andy. Can you tell me or elaborate on what happened to the existing cans before these new cans were delivered? What are we doing with the old or existing?
The old cans, our normal way of disposal of the old cans, would take them to the landfill. Mm-hmm. What we're doing now is we have a recycle company that will come in and take the cans away from us at no charge to us. They want the product to recycle. There is a value in it to them. However, the value is not that great for us to get involved. It's like 3 cents a pound. So by the time they estimated the cans, you're looking at probably $4,500 to $5,000 to get the product from us. Some people will come down and charge you to remove the metals, the axles, the handles, the metal bars. And I had an estimate about $25,000 to do that. So if you're recouping $5,000, so it's going to cost you $20,000 to do the job. I've had two companies that are interested in coming down to get the product, and they're willing to do a turnkey job, no cost to us. Bring the trucks down, bring the employees down, they load them up, they take them away. no exchange.
So there was no other municipalities that were interested in old cans?
Well, the problem with old cans is we have our logo on the side, and to have our logo stamped on the side and put out other municipalities, I thought it would be a problem, be an issue. So we chose to look at recycling it by this way.
Gotcha.
And that's the
EnviroVision
technologies, right?
Yes, yeah. EnviroVision.
Committee?
Yeah, Mr. Weiss, who is the social media component in your office?
Jen Knight right there. She's the one that that does the work for us.
Great job. I noticed the Facebook page grow as this thing was going on, from a few people to hundreds. So that was good stuff.
And next door, too. Very good job.
Excellent.
Yeah.
If there's no further questions, I'll be followed by Hillary to give the next presentation.
Well, thanks again, Andy. I appreciate your time.
14 minutes. Here you go.
Is that number four?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. We'll move to item number four, which is the update on the Snee Farm drainage system.
I believe it was a couple of months ago we came to y'all just to give you an update of where we were with the Snee Farm project. And now Hillary was going to give you a presentation of where we are today, because construction is going to be starting, I believe, July the 9th. I just want to make sure you're all aware there are several things that are going to be occurring, because I'm sure that the phone's going to start ringing as soon as the first hole is dug or the first tree comes down. So I'm going to let Hillary turn it over to Hillary, let her explain where we are, where we're going, and what's the plan.
Do we have copies of your cell phone, Jody?
I'm sure everybody has my cell number, but I'd be more than happy to share it again.
Okay. Hillary, how are you?
I'm well. How are you today?
Doing well.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to share this information. We've been working on the Snee Farm project for a number of years, starting with our assessment studies through the design phase and now moving into the construction phase. A couple of highlights. Snee Farm, we've broken the project into 14 different project areas. We are focusing on three core missions. We have two flood improvement projects. We have five water quality improvement sites, and then we're doing asset rehabilitation. Based upon our initial study, we are fixing the worst things in Snee Farm only at this time. We've got four different types of work. So we're doing pipe rehabilitation. That's a no-dig repair work for the pipes. We're digging up and replacing pipes that have completely failed. In some cases, replacing them with larger pipes. We are cleaning several of the canals and, of course, the water quality systems installations throughout the entire neighborhood area. For the schedule overview, we have completed the loan process. We have a contractor who is under contract and working on getting ready. So they're working on the utility locates. Working within a built subdivision means all of the power, gas, phone, cable, and everything is pre-existing. Water lines are all there in your way. We will have tree removals coming up and equipment staging coming up. This project is scheduled to last 2 years. We are ready to start, and we have three initial work areas. One is what we call Basin 4. That's mostly on the golf course, but in the Farm Quarter Road area, working on some of the flooding that occurs near that entranceway. Then we'll flip over near Whipple and Law Lane. We will have some traffic impacts outside of the neighborhood as we cross Whipple Road with some larger pipes and work on the pond in that area. And then we'll be working around Ventura Villas and the golf course in that first section as we work through all the 14 areas. And then after we're through with all of construction, within each area, we'll do sod replacements, damaged driveways if they are damaged, and working on curbing and asphalt road repair. So they'll work in an area, make all the closeout items, and then move on to
Can I stop you right
the next
there?
Phase. Yes, sir.
Regarding the sod and driveways, curbing and asphalt.
Yes.
We're going to wait until the very end before
Each little work area will get a complete closeout. Okay, so when we work in one section, we will do the road repairs, the sod, and the items there before we move on to the next phase.
Right,
now, they may be working multiple places at one time, but the idea is we don't leave somebody broken till the end of the 2 years. We want to have those completed. So my part in this project is I'm now part of the support team, so we will be turning over the hardest part of the project, which is construction, to our engineering project managers. That's Ken Rye and Sarah Mittemeyer. They've got the hard part. As you know, once you start digging, the fun really begins. And then our consultant, design consultant, is Wilpert, and Gulfstream Construction did win the bid award. They're also being supported by our building inspections division. We're going to be digging very close to some homes. Our easements in this neighborhood in some cases are only 12 feet wide. So the pipes are very close to the homes, and we want to make sure that we're careful with those. And finance and procurement are going to be a really big part of this team moving forward.
Let me ask you a real quick question. During the construction phase, do we have any personnel on site that we can contact or direct?
We do. So our consultant is providing the CE&I, so construction site over on the project during the day. We've also hired Ed Barbie as a part of that team for a construction liaison. He's working with the neighborhoods and part of that communication, reaching out with the affected residents as we move through the project area. Building inspections is going to be supporting us. We've required some special engineering reviews of those houses where we're digging close to them, and they'll come out and do some overseeing inspections of that work as well. So, and then Ken and Sarah are day-to-day working really hard on all of these items and coordination.
Quick question. So in the event that we do start hearing feedback from folks, hey, what's going on, whatever, I always think if you can give people sort of something to hold on to hope-wise, it's such a great thing. Is there any way, like say that we had a big thunderstorm, which we often do in the summer, like almost every day, in, I don't know, August, what would you say is the first point at which the people in these various areas will start to see a benefit?
So the design for the storm, when we reviewed the original design for Snee Farm, built to lower standards that we have today, the two flood improvement projects, they're not everywhere that floods. We're just taking care of the two worst areas, are to bring the system up so that what we call a 10-year storm, now that could, we could exceed that in a thunderstorm, and we definitely go past that when we're in a hurricane, is the idea is the water doesn't get into the houses anymore. We're keeping it in the green space, in the yards, but not inside the building envelopes or up underneath the house. So every storm is different, but a regular thunderstorm, afternoon shower, as long as we're not getting multiple inches of rain over a short period of time, that water should be farther away from their houses and kept within the drainage systems and road flooding.
So what is the date that you would estimate that we'd be at that point where they can hold on?
So the two areas that we're moving to first, which is we call them Basin 4 and Basin 11, are our flood project areas. The construction schedule has them finishing them up. They will not be done by August, so they will be under construction at that time. They should be done by midwinter, early spring, if all goes well.
That February 21st date at the end of the Basin 4?
You've got great eyes.
Finish March 6th. March
right.
6th.
This does take us, yes, into sort of June. We're sort of working through those areas. If we stay on schedule, sort of March area, those pipes will be in. We'll be working on restoration. And again, that's according to weather and utility conflicts and all of those other fun things that we get to encounter. Just some things for you to know. As we mentioned, we're working in a built neighborhood. We've identified 110 trees in the neighborhood that are in the way. So they've been planted over existing drainage pipes. In some cases, the roots are up inside the pipes, and in order to replace the pipes, they have to come down. And they're either in the easements or within the road right-of-ways. We've tried wherever possible to use the no-dig method, but some of those pipes are in such bad shape we don't have an alternative. And especially where we're using the flood improvements, they definitely will not fit in the same space with the pipes.
Have we contacted the residents who live in the area of the route?
Right. So
let them know that the trees are coming down?
Right. So the first part we did was we surveyed all the trees, so the people who have trees within the project scope are aware that those trees are there. The second part is our communications plan, working with our multimedia coordinator. She's working on flyers. Ed Barbie's been going door to door, knocking on doors. The trees that are coming down are now flagged so that people will see where those are located at. and making sure that we have those conversations of why we're in there taking them down. So
there have been community meetings or anything?
We have. We've been going to HOA meetings since we first started the project. They're annual meetings and then a few in between, the Snee Farm HOA and Ventura Villas as well. And they have some information posted up on their website, and we've been fielding calls in between, in some cases walking through yards with people and saying, "This, by the way, this tree needs to come down."
Right.
So I think the concern is perhaps more of people who are driving by and are not directly a part of those individual communications, who might see more things coming down and not have realized what those impacts were going to be.
Kenroy also has met with several residents and have had a positive meeting with them. So it's at least we're moving forward with that. So we are in communication, and we're going to continue to push with communication in reference to the trees, because I know it's going to be an issue as soon as it happens.
So is that an ongoing?
It's going to be an ongoing thing. It's going to be communication with through Jennifer Knight in our department for this entire project, trying to keep them informed of where we are, where we're going next, and what you may see.
Do we have a plan already in the current strategy for replacing some of those trees, and at what time? It would probably be one of the later things, I would think.
Out of the 110 trees, 16 of them are mitigation trees, and so we have the mitigation inches, but we haven't decided any strategy for accomplishing that at this time. There are, whether it's an offset or someplace else within the neighborhood, our goal is to keep those trees away from the drainage system in the future so that we don't have conflicts moving forward.
Right. I guess this is not having a total knowledge of drainage, but I certainly have a yard and know that having trees helps with keeping floodwaters back, or at least with drainage. So is it something where in time we will replace some of them, or that's not even in the discussion right now?
So we're going to work on those mitigation numbers. The tree canopy certainly slows the water down, and the trees help soak up the water. We just find that they don't work well with our infrastructure in most cases. So we'll be working through that as we get through the project, and whether that's going to be in public space or in private property will be something that we can report to you as we get to that decision point.
I'd like to recognize Mr. Cunane.
Hillary, I'm just interested in the water quality issues. I know you're an avid kayaker, and from Shem Creek, from Snee Farm to Shem Creek, is that... Is all of Snee Farm draining into Shem, or is some go the other way?
No,
or?
Snee Farm drains into Shem Creek only in massive storm events. Snee Farm drains into Horlbeck Creek, Boone Hall Creek and Horlbeck Creek, which is up in the Wando River, and that's actually under some new water quality restrictions, so this should help. It's a piece of our effort to work on that basin, and also Hobcock Creek, which is starting to show up on some of our polluted lists as we get more data from that area. So
what are you actually doing? If you could say in a couple
sure,
of sentences, not to take you over the whole meeting here,
what does it do to
make the water better?
So we're using a combination of systems. Bioretention is one, so we're creating more green space that's lower. So as the water floods, we flood out green space and allow the water time to soak into the ground versus pushing it out. We get water quality benefits for nitrogen, phosphates, and bacteria. And sediment as well. And then we've got a manufactured treatment device, which is kind of a scrubber cleaner that will go in on one pipe where we didn't have any green space to put something in. So a combination of sort of diverting water, letting it flood and soak into the ground, and then letting it move on more cleanly into the systems.
And those devices have maintenance programs attached to them?
They do. The manufactured treatment device is on a pretty regimented schedule. The other one is green spaces will be maintained by the HOAs, just cutting the grass, and they'll let us know if there are any. We'll go and inspect them once a year, and if they have any problems, we would be addressing the long-term
thank you.
Functionality.
You anything, Mr. Bustos?
Just a little off topic, but sure. While we're talking about drainage work, where are we right now with Mount Pleasant, the old part of town, their study or the plans for the basins there?
Actually, I believe it was maybe a week and a half ago we walked with Thomas and Hutton through the Royal Avenue Basin, mm-hmm. and we wanted to make sure where we stood with trees and location of trees before we actually, you know, made a final decision about placement. So we've made some adjustments in the field on Royal Avenue. So hopefully we'll have something back from Thomas and Hutton very soon in reference to the Royal Avenue Basin. The Edward Basin, we're a little bit behind because we were talking about going for gravity flow. and they had to redo some, do some engineering designs and some surveying in order to capture that information. So we're on schedule for Royal, but we're a little bit behind on the Edwards Park. And it was a very good walkthrough. We walked the entire basin area for Royal. It was a very hot day, but we saw some things that we needed to change and make some adjustments. So we're moving along on that project.
Great. Thank you.
So as I mentioned, there will also be fence removals. So if people have put up fences and landscaping in those drainage easements and right-of-way areas, those are always considered at risk. So those will be a part of the work as well. There will be, as we move through the project, some road work disruptions within the community, which will have neighborhood detours, and then we'll have night work on Whipple Road when we do the big crossing on Whipple Road over to the pond on the other side on the town's property. Jennifer will be working on the communications plan, and again, when we do restoration, we're doing sod or mulch only on the yards. We're not putting the fences back, but they can come to us and check. We want to make sure nobody drills fence posts through the new pipes as well and how those work. Basin 4, this is just a quick highlight of one of the first areas where we're going. This is mostly along the golf course, but we do back up to a couple homes. We're putting in larger pipes, diverting water into an existing pond and regrading some of the drainage canals over and through the area. But we're significantly increasing the size of the pipes, which gives our flood water someplace else to go besides in the yards and homes that we can have the capacity within the pipes. Couple of fast facts. So we're removing and replacing 1.2 miles of drainage pipes, cleaning and doing lining of 2.13 miles, canal restoration. We've got just over a half a mile of canal reconstruction and just under a half a mile of just general cleaning, which may, depending on what we find when we get those pipes back functional, whether they're structurally okay or not. The largest pipes we'll be installing are 43 inches by 68 inches. So we're going from something that's 24 inches to things that are much, much larger. That's a shorter section of pipe, but some of our other pipes are encroaching on that size.
Is there any spiral metal pipe that we're replacing?
We are replacing pretty much all metal pipe. We're taking it out and we're going back with concrete only. That's our standard. We no longer use metal pipe.
It looks like you're using some elliptical.
They're going to be box culverts and elliptical and box culverts.
Gotcha.
And it's very shallow, so we're very restricted. Things get wider because you can't go higher.
And flat.
That's right. Yes, sir. And that is it, unless you have any additional questions.
Committee? Good? Pretty good? Hillary, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is number 5, adjourn. Is there anybody on the committee that has any further business for this committee? Mr. DeMora, Mr. Peel, any further business in this committee in particular? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.
Hey, you made up about 10 minutes there.
Hey, man. Let's talk fast.